Today we're going to be talking about global data privacy and with a particular concentration on GDPR. As myself, Darren Ray, CEO of Fifthstep, and today I'm very pleased to be presenting with Rajan. Rajan, do you want to just give, the participants a quick introduction to yourself?
Absolutely. Thanks, Darren. Thanks for having me. My name is Rajan Kashyap, and I am responsible for pre-sales and solutions for Europe for Buildasoft. So I come with about 20 years of IT experience working with large enterprises, startups, as well as the software ISVs for implementing their solutions, especially on the compliance side of things. I will actually be talking about some of the impacts on IT systems because of the GDPR. Thanks, Darren.
Thanks, Rajan. Right. Well, let's get started then. So a quick slide just to show the objectives, learning objectives, and the topics that we're going to be covering. This webinar will be recorded, so we will make this available on the Fifthstep website. Both as a webinar, so as a recording like this, but also as a podcast. So if any of your colleagues managed to miss the presentation, couldn't make it to the live event, as I nearly didn't, then obviously you can join afterwards and listen afterwards. And of course, if you listened the first time and enjoyed it so much, you can always come back and listen again. Right, let's start talking about data privacy around the world to begin with. All of these countries have some form of data protection. Now, at the moment, it's a great deal of focus on Europe and on the GDPR, but all of these countries, and this isn't a definitive list by any stretch of the imagination, these are just some of the key ones and certainly ones that that we encounter a fair bit in our business. So each and every one of these has a certain degree of data protection. It varies, and not all data protection is equal, as I'm sure a number of you might be thinking to yourselves. But each and every one of these pieces of legislation or requirements has an impact on IT. And we'll be talking about some of those as we go through. Here's another map showing some more details of the differences between the different data protection regulation. Let's just touch on a few of the differences here. So if we start in the middle there, we've got the European Union flag there. And we've got a number of green ticks against the list. So they indicate that a CISO or data protection officer is required by the regulation or by the requirement. The personal data is recognized. The consent is required to use the data, to process the data. The breach notification is required. And that there is a degree of, a quite high degree in the case of GDPR, of geosensitivity. That means you can't send the data outside of a specific area without permission. So let's have a look at some of the others there. So let's start on the left-hand side with Argentina. Argentina is quite a surprise to some people that it has such stringent data protection regulation. It's actually built it was actually built with the Spanish data protection in mind. So it has its roots in European data protection, but it has some requirement for a CISO or DPO, not quite as stringent as the European requirement. It does recognize personal data, doesn't as yet have consent requirements or breach notification or indeed geosensitivity for Argentinian data. But it's a requirement nevertheless. And if you are writing applications or developing software or have clients in Argentina, it may well be the case that you need to have awareness of Argentinian data protection. Moving north now, from Argentina up to Canada. Canada has a collection of data privacy rules or laws that encompass some aspects of data protection, including the Canadian anti-spam regulation. There's no requirement for a CISO or a DPO There is personal data, recognition of personal data. There's also a consent requirement, and there's also a requirement for breach notification. But again, there's no geosensitivity. North America now, or the United States in particular, many people think that the requirements in the United States are limited to health data and things like that. That's not actually the case. There are a number of laws now and requirements, including a new one for those in the financial services sector called NYCRR 500, which requires a number of aspects of data privacy and recognition of breach notifications and things like that. So running down the tick boxes and crosses against the US, we've got a CISO or DPO required. That's true, depending on which legislation you have to comply with. Some recognition of personal data. It's not exactly the same recognition as the European definition, but there is a recognition of what's known as PII in the US. There's no consent requirement, but there is breach notification requirement. In fact, the most stringent of those being HIPAA, which is the requirement for health data, and also for NYCRR 500. They both require breach notification within 72 hours. There's no geosensitivity in the US. Okay, so now as we move east and we move to China, some people might expect with the political landscape in China that actually there's a great deal of data protection. And indeed, there's a number of boxes there, either an amber tick or indeed a green tick. But it's very much distributed amongst a number of laws, and there's not a single data protection law in China, which does make it a little bit more confusing if you're doing business in that region. But as the tick boxes indicate, there's no CISO or data protection officer required. There is recognition of personal data, not the same recognition as there is under GDPR. There is a consent requirement. There is a breach notification requirement. And there is some geosensitivity. It's not possible to remove data about Chinese residents from China. Okay, in Russia, we have some requirements there too. No CISO or DPO requirements. There is personal data. There is a consent requirement. There's no breach notification requirement, but there is geosensitivity. Again, you can't take data about Russian residents, Russian citizens outside of the outside of Russia. And lastly, just to touch on Australia. Australian regulation is sort of based on European regulation. It's their own regulation completely. It's not, but it does take into account some of the concepts as defined under the European regulation. They have a partial requirement for CISO and DPO. They have a definition of personal data, and they have a consent requirement, and they do have a breach notification, but they don't have any geosensitivity in Australia. Okay, let's move on to the next thing. Now, one thing I didn't mention as I started was, if you have any questions as we go along, do please ask them in the window, the application that started up when you joined the webinar. There's a question window in there. If you want to ask any questions as we go along, we do have space and time at the end. If there's any urgent questions as we come along that are particularly pertinent to a point that I or Rajan are making at the time, we'll try and keep an eye on those and answer those as we go. And if not, we will answer them at the end. Look at this nice target graphic here. Is there to indicate or to represent the nirvana of a single control base. Now, as many of you will understand, particularly if you're operating in an international business today, where you have multiple jurisdictions and multiple different requirements and regulations, it's sometimes very difficult to have or to understand which regulation applies where, and do you have to take a high tide view? So you have to take the highest common denominator or the lowest common denominator view. Well, we believe at Fifth Step that actually you can have a single control base. And you can establish that, and using GDPR as a base, because that's the current high tide in most areas, it really is possible to do that. And the breakdown that we recommend is you have the core control set based on GDPR. You have any regional controls and regional differences built on top of that. You may have particular lines of business or particular requirements that your organization has, not they're not regulatory requirements. They are just perhaps internal audit requirements or best practice as you see them that your business wants to have built in. And those can be line of business and also organizational controls. So you might have a different controls for part of your line of business. So perhaps in a chemical manufacturing line of business, you may have slightly different controls than in the sales organization, for example. We've helped a number of organizations think of their data protection regulation compliance in this kind of way and help them build out these control sets to actually be able to have a single control set. I did think about putting the flags on here and unfortunately ran out of time for that. But these are the countries that are deemed by the EU to currently provide a similar or what's known as adequate or equivalent protection as the data protection directive that's currently in force. Now, these may be updated with the enforcement of GDPR. There's no notification of that at this point in time. So as far as we're aware, this list is going to continue post May 25th when the GDPR comes into enforcement. So some countries on there that and some regions that may be a surprise to some organizations and some people, and some that may not be a surprise. One that perhaps, depending on how closely aligned you are with the United States, that may be a surprise is that the United States is conditionally thought of as providing adequate protection, and that's only if the EU US Privacy Shield has been implemented within the organization. But unfortunately, for those of you who are in or work with financial services organizations, that's not applicable to financial services firms. I mentioned that it was possible earlier on to have a single control set. I really believe that GDPR is going to become the standard for data protection. I believe it's possible, let's say. And some of the reasons why are that the nature of GDPR is so ubiquitous and it applies irrespective of where in the world your organization is based, if you're processing the data of European residents. That being the case, it's already becoming a global standard and one that organizations have to be dealing with, particularly those who are part of international organizations or those serving international organizations or organizations based in Europe. As I explained earlier on, implementing GDPR offers a good base, a good foundation to be able to implement local customization and a local version of GDPR or with the local requirements built on top of the GDPR base. The GDPR is also very client-centric. It really does follow the best practices around consent and breach notification. And customers are increasingly aware of the fact that firms are not providing the same level of expertise or data protection as they were expecting. So, let's have a think around some of the some of the recent breaches. Equifax is one that springs immediately to mind, where just about every adult in the United States had their personal data breached. And what's more, Equifax didn't tell those people for, well, depending on which report you actually have read or believe, up to 6 months. They kept that a secret. So all the time their data was out there being used and abused without any opportunity for them to take any action. So customers who are giving their personal data to organizations are very much expecting their data to be protected to a standard that's, you know, broadly speaking, aligned with GDPR. And that being the case, I think it's going to be a very good a very good way to standardize things going forward. The last one on there is the adoption of the GDPR in the US via the optional EU-US Privacy Shield. It demonstrates a flexibility and a regionalized route to equivalence, which wasn't really there previously. There was something called the Safe Harbor Agreement previously, but that was unfortunately quashed as part of some legal action against Facebook, actually, in Ireland in 2015. Standard, an important standard that organisations are going to look to comply with and to build their standards on top of. I mentioned the EU-US Privacy Shield earlier on, and again, I've put this in here
Darren, your voice is breaking in between.
I'm sorry about that, Rajan. Hopefully it's returning now.
Yeah, it's better now.
Great. Okay, so yes, this is a voluntary scheme that's operated, but once you've entered into that scheme and you've signed up for it, it does actually provide a legal framework under which the organisation has to adhere to rules and regulations that are comparable with the GDPR. Okay, so some headlines about GDPR. GDPR applies to organizations, irrespective of their location, if they're collecting, storing, or otherwise processing personal or sensitive information about EU residents. Now, I'm going to say that last bit again, okay, about EU residents. You notice there that I don't use the word citizens, okay? The application of the GDPR has nothing to do with citizenship. So if your organization is preparing for GDPR at the moment, and as part of IT, you've been asked to build a database or extend a database or whatever to keep track of EU citizens, actually, you're being misdirected and you need to go back to whoever's running your GDPR program and update them and have them come and speak to someone like FIFSTEP, who can actually help them understand that what the true requirements of the regulation are. Now, I draw such a point to that because there are many organisations, including some of the big four consultancy companies, who are out there misinforming people about the regulatory requirement. Okay, so remember, it's EU residents, not EU citizens. GDPR will apply to companies irrespective of Brexit. I remember speaking to a couple of companies in the weeks following the UK referendum to leave the EU, and a couple of them said, "Oh, well, this is great news because we've budgeted quite a large amount of money for GDPR next year, and we won't have to do that now." Well, I had a bit of a wake up call when I said, "Well, sorry guys, you do, because you know, we're going to be required to meet the GDPR standards well before we leave the EU, in fact 10 months before we leave the EU." So they had a little bit of a shock around that. The big scary numbers: many organizations and consultancy companies will be advising people that this is their biggest risk. It's far from the biggest risk, okay, but it is a demonstration of the teeth that the GDPR has. So fines for non-compliance can be as high as 20 million euros, 17 million pounds, or 4% of the annual global turnover of that organization. So if you're a Google or a Facebook or a Microsoft or a Yahoo or an Equifax, you're not going to be fined just 20 million euros. You're going to be fined 4% of your annual global turnover. So it makes it quite a number, and something that the those size organizations have really been taking notice of because of that. And as I've already mentioned, and as you guys are perhaps already aware, GDPR will be enforced from May 25th. The regulator, in fact, I was on stage with Elizabeth Denham, who is the information commissioner in the UK. She runs the information commissioner's office, and that's the data protection authority in the UK. And I was on stage with her back in October, and at that point she was very much reinforcing the fact that yes, GDPR will be enforced from May 25th, but it is going to be a softer landing. If you have a data breach on May 26th, let's say, or early June, it's not that the data protection authority is going to be fining you 20 million euros straight away and really coming down on you like a ton of bricks. They want to see that you've been compliant and that you've been working your way, at the very least, to compliance, to ensure that you're on your way. If you've completely ignored GDPR and then you've had a breach or a major complaint or something like that, that's the point when the fines are going to be introduced. So making sure that you're well on your way to compliance is an important aspect of this. I've put this very, very simple flow chart together. I'm not going to read through it all, but the slides will be available after the presentation. This is, as I say at the bottom, a very summarized diagram, and it shouldn't at all be used to replace a formal assessment process, but it is a guide for you to understand exactly what the rules are or how those rules are applied. As you can see, basically, if you're processing any data within the EU or of EU residents, then you need to understand the implications of the GDPR to you. Here's a collection of some of the terms, and some of these terms can be quite confusing to those who are not aware of European data protection. So I'm going to choose just a couple here to pick on so that you can understand the terminology. So personal data is right at the heart of what the GDPR is. Personal data is defined as anything that can identify an individual, okay? And that's either directly or indirectly. So a bank account number, for example, may be an indirect way of identifying an individual, but a bank account number is therefore defined as personal information. Even if you just have the bank account number itself, it's still personal information because even though you don't have the rest of the database, it still offers a means of tracking an individual and identifying that individual in their transactions, for example. Other information such as IP addresses, which is a particular interest to IT departments. So all the web logs that you have that are being collected right at this moment as your websites are receiving visitors are now going to be considered personal information. Now, this is quite a controversial one, and it's one that I expect there to be a lot of guidance and a lot of additional feedback about as the GDPR beds in. But at the moment, the legislation says IP addresses are personal information, so you need to be understanding the implications of that on your organization and how you keep and maintain those logs and how secure those logs are kept too. Location information is also another one that's very important. Some organizations might say, well, we never collect location information, but think about if you've got cell phones that you're providing to your staff. if you have the ability to track where those cell phones are, you know, if they're lost or stolen, for example, you have the ability to track and gain location data, and therefore that's considered personal information. I'm going to talk about consent, because consent is a big aspect and an important aspect around the GDPR. It hasn't changed so very much from the Data Protection Directive, which was the predecessor to GDPR, which came into force in 1998, but it's such an important aspect, it warrants a strong mention. So consent has to be freely given and specific and informed, okay? That means that where someone is providing personal information to you, perhaps via a website, for example, they have to be well informed about what the data is that they're being asked to provide, why they're being asked to provide it, what's going to be done with that data, who's going to be processing it, where it's going to be processed, so, you know, geographically where it's going to be processed, and if any of the data is going to be used for automatic decision-making or algorithmic decision-making, okay? Now, and the data subject, the person who the data is about, must give active consent. So they must tick the tick box. The tick box must not and cannot be pre-ticked for them any longer. They have to give active consent. Okay, so it has to be opt-in. Okay, the last couple I'm going to talk about here is data controller. The data controller is the person or organization that defines the purpose, so the reason for collecting the data. It's a very important role. Most organizations who are not third parties processing data on behalf of their clients are likely to be data controllers. You can also have joint data controllers or multiple data controllers in some complex situations, and some not so complex situations too, but most typically there'll be a single data controller, and it'll be very clear who is defining the reason and the purpose for collecting the data and for determining how the data is processed too. Now, in contrast to that, a data processor is a person or company who is processing the data on behalf of the data controller. That's not an employee of the data controller. They're not a data processor. It has to be a separate entity or someone working for a separate entity other than the data controller for them to be considered a data processor. Now, we start to move now towards the impact of GDPR on IT, and we're going to talk here about some of the rights and some of those that are of particular importance for you in IT and the impact that GDPR is going to have on IT. Now, the right to be informed all goes back to what I've just been speaking about consent. Okay, so the data subject has the right to be informed about how their data is being used, what it's being used for. Okay, so the impact on IT, you now have to make sure that information is presented on websites. So there's going to be a lot of websites being changed, a lot of other systems being changed to actually give active, open, and informed consent to the data subject. And what's more, logging that consent. Okay, it's no good just having a tick box if that tick box or the value of that tick box doesn't end up in a database at the end. So there's going to be lots of databases being extended and lots of websites being changed to have their consent authorization changed. The data subject also has the right of access. Now, what this means is, as a data subject, you can ask for a copy of your personal data from an organization, and that organization has 4 weeks in which to comply. Okay, that's a reduction in time from the previous data protection directive timescale. So there's less time to be able to provide that. And bearing in mind, since 1998, when the data protection directive came into force, the amount of systems and data being collected has gone up, you know, significantly, orders of magnitude in difference. So not only are there more systems to search now, there's less time in order to be able to search them and to provide that information back. What does that mean for IT? it means that if you haven't already begun writing and updating your systems to be able to do and to go, be able to cope with subject access requests, then that's something you need to be talking to whoever's responsible for your GDPR program about, because all of your systems need to be able to provide that that information, and they need to be able to provide the information in a human readable form. That means printed out, means a PDF, and it means decoded. So if within your organization, branch 17 is Sheffield branch, for example, okay, you need to be changing that so that in the printout for the subject access request, it says Sheffield branch, not branch 17. The third right is the right to rectification. So the data subject has the right to request that their data be corrected. Having got a subject access request and seen that their data is incorrect, or you know, for the fifth time received a bank statement, for example, with the incorrect name or address on it, something like that, they can request that their data be updated. So all of your computer systems have to have the ability to be updated, or to be able to trace the data back to its roots so that the original source system is updated with the correct information. Okay, so there's a lot of changes in that respect to how or to the rights of the data subject. A data subject can also ask for their data to be erased. Okay, so they can ask for, irrespective of whether you're still processing the data, they can ask for their data to be erased. Now, organizations do not have to honor the right to erasure, okay, where the data needs to be maintained for another purpose, a legal purpose. Okay, so such as if the data has to be retained for employment law or tax law or for anti-money laundering regulations and things like that, the data can still be retained. Okay, and should be retained. The GDPR does not overpower those kinds of regulations. The fifth right is the right to restrict processing. This is usually applied when a data subject has identified the data as being incorrect. They have asked for the data to be corrected, and in the meantime, they temporarily remove their consent or restrict, ask for a restriction on the use of their data until it's put right. This can be for a number of reasons, but your systems have to be able to reflect those changes. So again, if your GDPR program team have not notified you of these requirements in a number of the different systems that you are responsible for or that you're providing to clients, okay, you need to be thinking about how that is and how you might restrict the processing and what kind of restriction someone may be asking for. You know, is it restricting all of the data? Is it only restricting part of it? That will very much depend on the nature of your application. That's something obviously that Fifth Step can advise you on, but not over a webinar where the conditions are too broad and the application types are too broad. We're more than happy to have conversations with people about that afterwards. This next right is an absolute doozy, I think, for both IT and for organizations at large. The data subject has the right now to request a machine-readable version of their data. Yep, that's right. Their private data, their personal data, they have a right to request a copy of it, and you have to be able to extract and transform that data into a industry standard format, so XML or CSV, or if there's one particular format that's prevalent within your industry, into that format, and you have to be able to do that within the 1 month request period too. Okay, so have a think about that. Again, changes to IT systems and changes to IT's processes and procedures. Another thing that I must stress as well, the organization must ensure that the person making and exercising these rights has the right to do so. So you have to be able to prove that it is the data subject who's actually asking for these rights to be applied. Normal kind of stuff, really, but it's an important to stress that. The next right is the right to object. This is typically considered to be the right to object to the data being used for marketing purposes, but it can be being used for any purpose, particularly if the data subject feels their data is being used in a way that's not in accordance with the purpose that they originally gave consent for. Okay, so this comes back to why you need to have a good copy and a good record of what the data subject signed up for. And the last right is the right to manual processing. So this is where the data subject has the right to say, you've made a decision about me, for example, in a mortgage application, you turned me down for the mortgage. I believe that was based on bad information, or because your systems were have bad information. I want that that decision to be reviewed. I'm just going to touch on this one quickly. It's really summed up by that first sentence. GDPR requires breaches to be reported within 72 hours of the breach. Okay. I mentioned Equifax earlier on. They took 6 months. Okay, you have 72 hours, 3 days. And that's not 72 working hours, that's 72 hours. Okay, so as an IT department or people working in or with IT departments, you guys need to understand that you have to have good breach protection. You have to be able to respond to data loss, hacking events, other forms of data breach, and you have to be able to respond quickly to be able to fulfill those questions that are listed below. At least those questions. As I said earlier on, the GDPR requires, in many cases, a data protection officer or a CISO. It's not in all cases, there are some guidelines, but if you're processing more than 5,000 records of personal information, the likelihood is you're going to need to have a data protection officer. Likewise, if you're processing sensitive personal information, the definition of which we saw earlier on, if you're processing sensitive personal information, then again, you're going to need a data protection officer. That needs to be a named individual. It can be a full-time person within your business, or it can be a function that's provided by a supplier. And Fifth Step has a service, a data protection officer as a service that we provide to clients all around the world, fulfilling exactly these requirements. Rajan, I've talked for what seems like an age, and I'm sure it seems longer to the audience, but we're going to start handing back over to yourself now for you to cover some of the aspects.
Yeah, thanks, Darren. And you've covered, you've set up a good base in terms of for me to come and sort of dig deeper into what are the changes going to be on IT side of things. So if we go back see the IT systems changes need are going to come from a few things. You know, number one, how easily are you able to get the consent of an individual? And how easy are you able to process the request for example, request to be forgotten or data portability or any of sort of stuff? And I think how easily are you able to explicitly tell your customer that this is how I'm going to use your data? And that's where, and those are the things that we'll have to sort of look at when we actually talk about the individual impacts on the individual layer and the IT systems. So it'll start probably at the top, which is, you know, your mobile devices, your laptops, your iPads, and your web browsers and things like that. So for some of the mobile devices and all, you'll have to look at in terms of, are you actually storing data on the devices? You know, for example, if you have a sales application and you're just downloading all the data to be processed offline, you know, you have to look at that data. What kind of data are you storing? And is your device encrypted? And do you have mechanisms to actually remotely wipe it off and things like that? And you know, if you're a field services, if you're taking photos of from machines and people and around there, you know, where are they stored and how are they stored and things like that. So those are some of the impact analysis that sort of needs to be done primarily on the mobile devices and some of the individual devices, and specifically with the BYOD coming into play. You know, you'll have to see if those are if your employees are actually using those devices for their personal use as well as the commercial use and things like that. And then coming to next layer, which is primarily the application layer. And this is where a lot of action sort of has to happen in terms of, you know, your privacy statements have to change, your consents have to change. And consent, you know, as you said, you know, all these rights, you know, there has to be granular consent that has to be taken from the customer. And in terms of, for example, kids, and if you have a business which has kids registering to your website, or there has to be explicit consent taken from their parents. So you need to devise those systems. You need to build those systems in terms of that if your customer is a minor, then the parents give those and give those consents. And one of the other things is essentially you need to know how your data is flowing from what system to what systems. If you have, let's say, APIs, you know, which are giving which are accessed by other systems. So you need to understand, is this data actually going outside my geo locations? Is this data how this data is getting used by other applications? Are those applications GDPR compliant or not? Because one of the things is going to happen is as a part of the audits, you might be asked that, okay, tell me how your data is flowing end to end, which means you need to be able to draw a map. Right from the place where explicit consent or data of a customer is taken, and then all the way through back to the systems and out of the systems as well. So those are the kind of changes that you'll be expecting on application layer, and specifically in terms of, for example, data portability. If you are a website who's a shopping website, so they'll come back and say, you know what, I need all the lists of my favorites and favorites and shoppings done in last whatever time, and you'll have to have a mechanism to sort of extract that data and give it back to them. The next layer is the data layer, and some of the critical changes that are going to happen are on the profiling side of the things, because I think in terms of data access controls and things like that, they're already there in most of the enterprises because of the earlier data directive which we have, but this one is something which we are saying that, you know, explicit processing consent. So for example, if I come back and say that, okay, I do not want my data to be processed for marketing, and then you already have an algorithm which is built, now you have to go back and change those algorithms. That means, you know, you'll have to have changes on your data warehousing and analytics, big data, or any of those kind of changes that you're doing. Second change that is largely coming is going to impact is that how do you sort of segregate the data when you do the profiling for the customer? So you want to do a profiling. So if you want to do profiling for, let's say, just the age and what kind of shopping that they do, that won't comprise of a personal data, because just by looking at the age, you cannot identify an individual. But if you put age and the date of birth and address together, you can identify an individual. So those are some of those changes we'll have to look at on a data warehousing and analytics side. Of course, BrittleSoft can help there in terms of from our service lines. Next layer is the actual infrastructure layer, and this is where you back up your data, store your data. And when I say infrastructure layer, it essentially, I use the word loosely, because you can actually be using an AWS, you can use it in your own data centers, or you can using Azure and all. So you'll have to understand what are your retention policies there. You have to understand what are your backup policies there. For example, if you have been storing data on a tape, and a customer comes back and say that, okay, I want to execute my right to be forgotten. Do you have can you actually delete that data from those tapes, and is it financially viable to you, or what are the strategies? There could be strategies in terms of whatever your data you store as a backup, you anonymize it. But as Darren said earlier, if there is a regulation that needs data to be saved for, let's say, 7 years, 8 years, or something, you know, then those rules will override the GDPR regulations. But those are some of the things essentially. And I want to take a couple of examples here where some of the problems with the, for example, the AA, the one in the UK. So they didn't even have a web application firewall. So which means someone was able to do a simple SQL injection and get all the data. So those are some of the things that, you know, you'll have to be really, really careful. I mean, although it is nothing new from a GDPR standpoint, but yes, those are the things people will be fishing for, because I was talking to someone and there are people who are going to come after just because, you know, the fines are so heavy. So they want to use it to their advantage and try to prove that, you know, there are organizations out there who doesn't have IT systems as robust as they should be. So next is, Dan, can we move to the next slide, please? Yeah, so, but with all that saying, you know, how do you prepare, you know, as an IT leader, as an IT provider, how should you prepare? And here, this is not a definitive guideline, but these are some of these things that you should do. You want to start thinking about, and this is where you should try and focus as first priority from a GDPR implementation standpoint. The first one is know where your data is, and I can't stress it enough that you need to have a good view of your data, where your data is and where it is flowing. I know many organizations, I work with large enterprises, they'll come back and say, you know what, yeah, we know it, but when you start actually getting into it, they don't know how many of their applications and how many of their databases have write access and people read access, and people are just exporting those data into CSVs and things like that. That's extremely important. The second is look at all the data that you're capturing. You know, do you really need all that data? Okay. For example, if you're just a charity and you're asking for your sexual orientation, you know, it's not a data that is needed, because sometimes what happens is organizations go back and they start collecting all the data, hoping that, you know, it will be used sometime in the future. Please don't do that. And that's what I advise all my customers, that only collect the data that you really, really need, and there's a lawful reason for you to collect that data, and, you know, delete any of the unwanted data. Second is plan for your application changes. Sometimes they look very trivial because it's a terms and conditions changes. It's a explicit consent changes. I'm going to just put one more checkbox out there, change the web page and bit of it. But that's sometimes it's not so simple. So for example, what if you're using something like as in Salesforce or a ServiceNow or any of those SaaS providers? You have to go and talk to them. If you're using SAPs and all, you have to go and talk to those OEMs and understand that how those changes are going to come into those softwares, and then you'll have to start looking at and changing those changes. You know, those could become quickly complex changes. Next thing you should start planning about is, there are going to be many requests in terms of either data retrieval requests, data to be forgotten, or portability and things like that. You know, you need to have systems around that, because as Darren said, it's 4 weeks. You're just going to get 4 weeks to fulfill all those requests. So if you're not able to do that, you know, they might go back to the regulator and say that, okay, this is not happening, and the regulator might come back and start auditing you. So you need to start putting those systems which will make these requests easier. Next is, you know, look at all your in-flight projects. For any new project that you start, you know, you might have GDPR as a requirement, and something which is in production, you're going to anyways do an audit and all. But what about your in-flight projects? Look at the requirements that are there for the GDPR. Have a GDPR analyst review the project requirements. Next one is, how to minimize your likelihood of data breaches. You know, more controls, encryption is one of the key, anonymization, pseudo-anonymization. There are many ways to essentially look at and decrease the data breaches. And of course, you need to put a system together to inform the data breaches within 72 hours. So I'm just 4 minutes more. And then one of the other things that you might want to review your outsourcing contracts as well. And if you are an outsourcing provider or if you do outsource, do look at all your outsourcing contracts and try and implement or incorporate GDPR into that. There are certain cases that GDPR might be applicable directly to the outsourced third party as well. So those are some of the things that you would probably need to look at. Can we move to the next slide, please, Darren? This one. So what do you do next? You know, in terms of, you know, we've spoken about an IT here, that these are some of the things that you probably need to start looking at the IT. But in the overall GDPR IT is going to be just 20% of it. There is going to be a lot more organization changes and everything onto it. So you might want to start with understanding the jurisdiction requirements. Do you actually have to do it or not? You might want to get into the data categorization, data flow I've already spoken about. Then you talk about the third-party compliances. You put the policies, procedures, and things like that. So Darren, do you want to talk about a little bit more about what kind of policies and procedures you expect the GDPR to enforce?
Yeah, there's lots of policies and procedures, things like retention policies, backup and recovery policies, let alone security policies and data privacy and use policies. All of those kind of policies are going to be required as part and parcel of the GDPR, and they're going to run alongside your existing policies if you've or supplement or replace the existing policies.
Okay. Thanks. And then, of course, you know, you're talking about making the system changes, testing those incident response plans and things like that. Dan, do you want to talk about jurisdictions and the continuous improvement, please?
Yeah, making sure that you've got the ability to adhere to any geographic restrictions and requirements. This is going to really come into how you design your data centers, which data centers you use from an IT perspective. We've done a lot of work just recently with a number of large clients around helping them design their data centers and design which applications are going to go into those data centers so that they can adhere to their data protection requirements. It's very much an important aspect, so do think about that. And the last one, I might as well cover that one off, Rajan, since I'm speaking there. Implement and run a continual improvement process. This isn't a one and done project. Okay, I'll say it again, it's not a one and done project. You've got to make sure that it's done the right way and that you become compliant, but then that it's maintained and that there's checks and balances in place to ensure that each and every change to the system and to the processes maintains compliance over time. Rajan, anything to add to that?
No, I think you've summed up really well, Karen.
Great stuff. Well, let's well, we're about to take questions, and thank you very much. I can see there's a number of questions in the hopper already. Use this next minute or so just to fire off any additional questions if you have them. I know we're just coming up to time, and I do apologise. That's my fault for my machine's fault for being a little bit sluggish earlier on. So I'm going to do a quick shameless plug. I've written a book around GDPR. It's been a bestseller on Amazon in the business law section. If you would like some more information about GDPR, then do search on your local Amazon store for the Little Book of GDPR. It's available as an ebook and also in paperback, depending on where you're based. If you want to know even more about GDPR, then you can go to the Fifth Step website and find our podcasts and our blogs and our videos. There's lots of information there around GDPR. We've been talking about this for the last 2+ years, trying to help people get an understanding, get ready for GDPR. So there's a fair amount of material on there. And of course, make sure you get in contact with either myself or Rajan if you've got any questions or anything, any help that you need with any implementation around GDPR. We're here to help and would love to be working with you guys. So I'm going to move on to some of the questions now. Let's do that. Okay, so first question. Okay, Peter, a question from you. After Brexit, will data sensitivity be restricted to the UK? No, the UK government has said that they will maintain adherence to the GDPR and equivalency with the GDPR. And in fact, the updated Data Protection Act is going through the process of becoming law right now. So that will be done and ready for May 25th. Yep, so the second part of your question there, no, the data, the question is, for example, we are a cloud admin solution for insurers. Does the client policy data have to reside in the UK? So no, still has to reside within the EEA though. Okay, so within the extended economic area within Europe. Miliand, I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name there. I'm sure it's Miliando, but would the data protection regulation apply for a citizen of the EU in a country where no regulations are applicable? Yes. So where that's the nature of GDPR. The regulation is applicable worldwide, irrespective of which country it is. So it's applicable in all of the EU countries. It's applicable in the US. It's applicable in China, it's applicable in Australia, you know, insert country name there, it's applicable. And the EU will be, and the data protection authorities will be fining companies in different countries, irrespective of where those are. Is there any specialist skill qualification for a data protection officer? What are all the attributes of data that be governed under GDPR? Okay, well, second part is a little bit of a longer one, but I can answer the first part. Specialist skill qualifications for a data protection officer? No, not for a data protection officer. Well, that's a little bit of a mistruth. In Spain has implemented a data protection officer qualification. They are the only country and the only place at this point in time who has a formal qualification. And if you drop me an email after, I'll be more than happy to answer the remainder of those questions. They're just a little bit long for the webinar, given the shortened amount of time. Would every marketing campaign need an approval from the data subject? No, not every marketing campaign, but when you collect the data, you need to have the right to be able to market and use the data for marketing purposes. Marketing is the only activity that's the business activity that's mentioned by name within the GDPR. So be very cautious about misusing data, you know, not using it in alignment with the purpose. If the data subject didn't sign up to marketing, you can't use it for marketing. You have to make sure that they're aware that you're going to be using it. Would email from a data subject be considered consent? That depends on the scenario. If you are a recruitment company and you are and someone emails you their CV, okay, their resume, then they have given consent for that resume to be used. The best practice would be for that recruitment company to then send back a copy of their data collection purpose and all the other information that would normally be displayed before they gave consent. That would be the best practice. But in some circumstances, yes, email can be considered consent. And the last question that I have on here at the moment, so please, anyone jump in if you've got further questions. For sole traders and contractors, how does GDPR apply? Okay, so as a sole trader, your information, because you are, your information is about you and your company. So insurers and banks and other people who are processing your information have to treat your company name as in the same way as they would your personal information. You also have to, though, adhere to the GDPR, and you can only process the information that you're provided or that you are processing on behalf of your customer, you can only process that information in accordance with the purpose that they collected it for. Okay, so you may be considered a data processor in that respect. Okay, I hope that makes sense. And that was the last of the questions. Rajan, I whizzed through those questions. Was there anything else that you would add in either a general respect or specific to any of those questions?
No, Darren, I think I'm good. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, everyone, for attending today. It's been a great pleasure to be here with Rajan and the team from Birlasoft. Thank you very much, guys. Much appreciate working with you. It's absolute pleasure. And the additional information that you bring and presenting on the webinar today. If anyone does have any other questions, needs any help, or believes that their GDPR team need any additional assistance or need some advice about what GDPR really is, then do please reach out to either myself or Rajan. We'd be very pleased to hear from you. But with that, we'll close down the webinar. Thank you very much again, and I look forward to speaking to you shortly.
Thank you very much, Darren. Thanks, everyone.